one comes back from war unchanged.
You forget how different the world is over here.
2.5 million Americans have fought in Iraq and Afghanistan since 2001. They represent a new generation of warriors.
Four men gave their lives for me to do something with mine.
I was luckier than some in the fact that, you know, I had a job waiting, you know, for me, which was huge, and I was incredibly grateful for. You know, I had certain services and supports that were incredibly helpful. But I also know I still had my own transition issues. I still had a family who wasn't sure how to talk to me about it, because they were doing it out of love, but they, you know, were unsure. Do they ask questions? Do they not ask questions? Do they ask the wrong questions? What if they ask the wrong questions? And so in many cases, the default answer simply became, we won't ask anything. Mm-hmm. And for them, they thought that was the smarter thing to do. For me, my interpretation was that meant they didn't care. And so a whole lot got lost in translation. I also know I dealt with transitions issues from everything from, you know, small things like lights that I didn't think I'd have a transition with, because you're in an area that has 100% light discipline. And then you go from there, and a week later, you're in Times Square. So, wow. You know, the churns that your brain is doing at that point. And so I saw not only what happened to me as I made the return, I was watching what was happening to my soldiers. I saw what was happening when soldiers were waiting 400, 500, 600 days in order to claim VA benefits, you know, waiting long to go see a doctor. And these are the kind of things that I was like, you know, I felt like part of the problem was, you know, A, there was a capacity issue. But another big part of the problem was we were returning back to a country that really had no idea who we even were.
Our grandfathers never talked about World War II or Korea or Vietnam. If you ask them, they wouldn't talk about it. Has the soldier changed and is now ready to engage a little bit? Or it's kind of one of those prison things, like you never ask, what were you in for? Soldiers, you never ask, did you kill someone? Help us out with how to interact then effectively with soldiers.
It's a great question. And I think, honestly, the key thing, what I always tell people, is ask the questions, have the conversations. Because, you know, do soldiers want to be bombarded with questions like, did you kill anybody? No, we don't. Because, frankly, for a lot of us, it's just questions you don't want to answer, because it really brings up some of the worst moments in your life. And that kind of stuff no one ever wants to be reminded of, no matter what the situation or occurrence is. But I want people, I wanted people to engage. I wanted people to you know, not just finish with thank you for your service, but then what's the next sentence after that? You know, ask me stories about my soldiers. Ask me stories about the Afghans that we worked with. Ask me questions about the food that we ate. Whatever curiosity that you have, I wanted to be able to engage, because also where you saw a difference between World War II and even Vietnam and these wars here was in World War II and Vietnam, the numbers, the percentages of our population that were directly involved in those wars were much, much higher. In World War II, the numbers up close to 20% of the nation had some type of direct involvement inside of the war. And here, the number is less than 0.5%. And so the challenge of when these conversations are not taking place is these memories, these stories, they never get shared. And then so when you have people who are just kind of keeping it internal and letting it just bubble and fester within them, that never leads to a positive conclusion.
So we've got so efficient with war, and we can do the job at least in those two places with so few soldiers.
Exactly.
But America has become somewhat disconnected
from
its soldiers.
That's exactly right. Where we have, you know, where we have America as the whole going to war, but Americans not really feeling it or noticing it at all.
You're giving me some perspective, and I'm wondering, where does the heavy burden of survivor's guilt, which we hear a lot about, sorry to go back to a film metaphor, but it's kind of like Saving Private Ryan. It seems a lot of soldiers and sailors are surviving on behalf of someone that didn't make it back.
Yeah, very much so. And it's even difficult to understand the power of survivor's guilt unless you feel it yourself. Because, you know, one thing we all knew and realized very quickly in combat is every time you left the wire, and when I say left the wire, kind of left the base, left the secure areas, whatever, you almost took on this form of, it was almost like a very fatalistic feeling, because the randomness of war is the most dangerous thing about it. It's, you know,
completely
it's
random.
It's completely random. I mean, like, you know, I told people, whereas like, you know, we would go on offensive operations, but frankly, offensive operations were the thing I was least scared of. Because we were bringing overwhelming firepower. You know, if we were going after three people, we brought 30. You know, we knew how to do those operations. The scariest thing was walking around in a village when you think nothing is going on and having there be a sniper who then decides to take a pop shot. The scariest thing going on is going from point A to point B and an IED goes off, because you cannot prepare for that. You can prepare in terms of battle drills, like, okay, if an IED goes off here, then you need to hurry up and zoom through the hit zone and all that kind of stuff, and that's fine. But you can't prepare to be the unlucky soul who's sitting in the wrong seat that happens to be sitting next to an IED. And I think that what happens is that survivor's guilt becomes very real, because the randomness of war also leads to that idea where if you happen to make it through, why me? And why not that other guy who is now in a very different position, if they even were to survive that?
As you tour the nation, screening Coming Home with Wes Moore, what are you hearing on the part of families or soldiers who encounter this?
Well, I've been so taken by the amount of support, because I think for a lot of veterans and a lot of families, they look at the screen and they say, that's our story. That's, you know, whether you're in a situation like you know, Andy Clark's situation, where, you know, a local guy from this area who gets out of the military but still feels that draw to the dopamine push that comes from combat, but I got a family I got to take care of, or whether it's a story of a Bobby Henlein who now currently has third degree burns over 70% of his body. But has now turned to comedy and has now become a stand-up comedian as a way of A, making people feel more comfortable with him, but then also B, a way of healing himself and helping himself to reintegrate and reenter back into society. Whether it's someone like Latrice, a woman who now spends her time working for the VA suicide hotline. So every day, her form of service now is she spends every day, you know, waking up in the morning and helping veterans who are in their darkest moments. And so we try to give kind of a cross-section of our veteran population, of our American humanity, and show them for who they are.
You show Andy Clark's return to his family at Denver International Airport. How's Andy Clark doing these days?
He's doing well. I mean, Andy Clark is actually currently deployed, and he's back overseas. I think he still very much, and we see in the film this tug and pull that he has, where he's got an extraordinary wife and an amazing son who want nothing more than for their husband and their dad to be home all the time. But then you have Andy, who says, you know, but I have to make a living, and this is the best way that I know about going to make that living right now, even if it means I got to head overseas for periods of time and be away. Dealing with the realities of what that reentry means, what that employment reentry means, because he knows in many cases, while this is very difficult in the family, he's got, especially, you know, financially and in terms of fulfilling him as a soldier, he's got a great job. And so he's doing well, but I think the realities that we tried to show in Coming Back are still very much there.
How do you help America with this special on PBS, Coming Back with Wes Moore, help us welcome back our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines?
I think what we're trying to do, it's a great question. I think what we're trying to do is just add a sense of humanity behind this. So when we're talking about these individuals, when we're talking about the numbers, when we're talking about the 2.5 that have served, or the $31 billion that was added to GI Bill benefits, or whatever, all the numbers that we throw out for the veteran community, I want them to see Bobby. I want them to see Tammy. I want them to see Latrice. I want them to see Andy. I want them to see Star and Chris and their beautiful daughter. I want them to see who we see. So as we're making decisions, as we're making policy proclamations, I want them to understand exactly who we're talking about.
Coming Back with Wes Moore appears on PBS. It's a three-part series, and it begins in May. Thanks very much, Wes Moore.
Thank you.